Governor Poloz is going to start with some opening remarks, and then we'll go straight to your questions. Governor.
Well, thank you, Jill. Good morning, everyone. Bonjour tout le monde. First of all, let me apologize for the short notice. I want to thank you for joining Senior Deputy Governor Wilkins and me to discuss today's interest rate announcement. Before turning to your questions, let me briefly summarize today's announcements. First, we have lowered our target for the overnight rate by 50 basis points to 0.25%. This unscheduled rate decision brings the policy rate to its effective lower bound to provide support to the Canadian financial system and to the economy during the COVID-19 pandemic. The government has announced decisive fiscal actions to defend Canadians and the economy from the damaging effects of COVID-19. Ces mesures visent à venir en aide aux particuliers et aux entreprises en ces temps très difficiles et à réduire au minimum tout dommage permanent à la structure de l'économie. Notre politique monétaire joue un rôle de soutien important. Des taux d'intérêt bas contribuent à amortir le choc en diminuant les coûts d'emprunt. Nous nous efforçons aussi de maintenir le fonctionnement du système financier en veillant à ce que la population et les entreprises aient accès au crédit. The intent of our decision today is twofold: to immediately support the financial system so it keeps on providing credit, and over the longer term, to lay the foundation for the economy's return to normalcy. We are conducting a series of market operations to help ensure that credit is available and that markets continue to function. We've announced two new ones today. First, the Commercial Paper Purchase Program will help to restore a key source of short-term funding for businesses. Second, the bank will begin acquiring Government of Canada securities in the secondary market. This will help address strains in the Government of Canada debt market and enhance the effectiveness of all other actions taken so far. We will keep this program going until it's clear that the economic recovery is well underway. La banque suit de près les conditions économiques et financières en coordination avec les autres banques centrales et les autorités budgétaires du G7. Elle publiera une mise à jour de ses perspectives à la mi-avril. The bank is closely monitoring economic and financial conditions in coordination with other G7 central banks and fiscal authorities. We will update our outlook in mid-April. As the situation evolves, Governing Council stands ready to take further action as required to support the Canadian economy and its financial system and to keep inflation on target. With that, Senior Deputy Governor Wilkins and I are happy to take your questions.
Thank you, Governor. So we're going to go to questions now. We have a fairly long list, so we're going to do one question per reporter in the first round, and if we have time, I'll go back for second round. Please, when I call on you, state your name and affiliation. I just want to remind people to mute their line if they're not asking a question, and you can do so by pressing star 6, and to unmute, you press star 7. Avant de poser une question, veuillez vous identifier. Libre à vous de poser vos questions dans la langue officielle de votre choix. Je vous demanderai de mettre votre ligne à le mot discrétion si vous ne posez pas de questions et appuyons sur étoile 6 et faites étoile 7 pour l'enlever. First question is from Steve Scheer, Reuters.
Good morning, Governor. My question is, you know, we're getting pretty close to zero now. Do you think that we might head into negative interest rate territory, or what do you think will come first, if something else might come first before we get there?
Well, we've said clearly before that interest rates below zero are in the monetary policy toolkit, that approximately minus 0.5 would be the theoretical lower bound. Based on when the economy begins to turn to cash en masse. However, having that was delivered in a speech back in 2015, and during that time, we've seen number of experiences with negative interest rates. And our conclusion from that is that the negative effects for the financial system are pretty significant. And at this stage, our main focus is on the functioning of the financial system. We all know that monetary policy itself, that is the effect of stimulus from interest rates, is having very little effect on the economy at a time when the economy is effectively shut down. Right now, we're focused primarily on market functioning to ensure that credit is available throughout the system and that things function properly. And so at this stage, it would be not sensible to think of interest rates going lower than this. We consider this to be the effect of lower bound. As I said, going lower is a theoretical possibility, but not one we're contemplating. And in fact, we think the system will work better at this level, and we intend to continue it for the time being.
Thank you, Governor. Next question from Greg Quinn.
Good morning. I was curious about the timing of this move coming in on a Friday at the end of the week in financial markets, and so soon after the government doubled its direct aid to the economy. Why is this necessary at this time?
So as I mentioned just a moment ago, most of our moves in the past 2 weeks have been focused on restoring financial market functionality, rather than thinking of it as monetary policy per se. Because all of the things that we're doing, whether fiscal or monetary, will have very little effect on the economy if the financial system is not functioning properly. So that is a sense the plumbing of the system needs to be working well for anything to happen well. And so all of our efforts have been focused on that. And as we mentioned, that in the past 2 weeks, the things that we have done have improved market function quite a lot, but there continue to be strains in the in most markets, and including the Government of Canada market. The CP market is particularly strained; it's effectively frozen. So we believe that by unblocking that through our actions, just as happened earlier with the BA purchase facility, there was a significant improvement in market conditions for the ability of firms to access credit. The commercial paper market is important from that point of view. The Government of Canada market is foundational to all of these markets. If it's not functioning smoothly with narrow bid-ask spreads, then the rest of the system doesn't function well. So that's why we're turning to that attention now. And the timing is basically dictated by that. In terms of the economic outlook and how it all fits in, that's April 15th when we'll discuss that. We'll have a lot more, I think, to say about the longer term outlook for monetary policy at that time.
Thank you. For those of you who have just joined the call and may not have gotten the instructions, if you would like to ask a question, I can put you in the queue if you email communications@bankofcanada.ca, communications@bankofcanada.ca. Next question is going to come from Kim McCrail.
Hi, thanks. Governor, can you explain how long Governing Council had been discussing the possibility of moving into quantitative easing through this particular crisis, and what has changed and when it changed to make members of Governing Council decide this was the next move to make?
Well, so we've been in constant communication. We meet most days, virtually, of course. This is the first time that the senior deputy and I have been in the same room together in full 2 weeks. And as you can tell, perhaps maybe not from where you're sitting, but we're quite separated at this stage and intend to remain so. The whole Governing Council has been physically separated. We've been meeting virtually every day. And so it's been an ongoing dialogue about the stages of the shock where policy should be headed, and of course monitoring how things are functioning in the financial system. As I said a moment ago, our timing at this stage has more to do with functioning in markets than it does about monetary policy. We have begun to, with the staff is working hard on a new outlook for us for the April 15th monetary policy report. We've had our first look at some of that at this stage. It's really just early work. And as you can tell from other economists, it's a very hard thing to do. So we'll integrate a more fundamental economic narrative with our policy direction April 15th. For now, most of our focus has been on market functioning and indeed, really, when I know you're quickly using the term QE. I'm not going to argue with that. It's just that what we're doing today is this QE is normally aimed at some form of yield curve control or, you know, longer term interest rate influence. And at this stage, all we're trying to achieve with these extensive purchases of financial assets is to improve the functioning of the market so buyers and sellers can find one another and achieve price clearing.
Thank you. Next question is coming from Jordan Press. Go ahead, Jordan.
That's okay. I can just pronounce my name. Good morning. I wanted to ask, what is you talk a lot about basing your decisions on data. And so I'm curious, what are the data points that you saw that required you to do this today? And maybe is a kind of put into the narrative for people who are looking at this wondering, what does this say about the economy that maybe you know that they don't know at the moment?
Well, I can confidently say that there's very little about the economy that we know that others don't know. So it's not that. As I said, the emphasis is on market functioning. So I'm going to ask Ms. Wilkins to summarize some of those concrete developments that have prompted us to move over the last week.
Thank you, Governor. It's clear when you look at different market measures, whether it's yields or spreads of different securities against benchmark Government of Canada, that risky spreads have widened quite a lot in the corporate sector, as well as in other traditionally less risky places, even CMBs, so Canada Mortgage Bonds, which have a government guarantee. And what this is reflecting is just the fact that there's a lot less liquidity in the market as people are moving to cash, as they're deleveraging. And in fact, just practically speaking, as they're doing their operations from home, this has caused liquidity to dry up in the market amongst all this uncertainty and create the stresses that we're seeing in those measures. Another measure that you can look at are bid-ask spreads. So that's the difference between what somebody wants to buy it and what somebody wants to sell at. And those have, in very core markets, such as Government of Canada's, become a lot wider. So these, in addition to very frequent conversations with dealers in these core markets, with bank treasurers and other market participants, we've been able to diagnose what's going on and design facilities that will improve funding liquidity and market liquidity so that funds can be channeled to business and households at a time when they're going to need them.
Thank you. Next question from Dave Parkinson, Globe and Mail. Go ahead, Dave.
Oh, hi, Governor and Senior Deputy Governor. Appreciate you doing this so quickly for us. I just wanted to know, and again, getting to the, you know, the governor just said that he wasn't going to argue with anybody calling this quantitative easing. I do want to see it to better understand the distinction that's in your mind between what you're doing, where you're actually expanding the balance sheet. You know, you're making direct purchases of Government of Canada debt on the secondary market. You know, it certainly looks a lot like QE, and I'm just wondering if functionally this will accomplish the same sort of thing that we generally have in mind when we talk about QE, or if you do see a substantial difference between what you're doing and what we would generally recognize.
Yes, Dave, what we've said is that when we're adopting a true QE program, we would announce it as such and indicate exactly what our objectives were, whether it's a certain part of the yield curve or the whole yield curve or what have you. So it's about the objectives. Our objectives today are to restore good market function in the financial markets. So it's certainly the case that a QE program will help restore market functioning. So the two are very closely related, of course. And as I said, I'm not resisting calling this a QE program. It's just that we are doing what we call LSAPs, large-scale asset purchases, with the objective to improve market functioning. Perhaps, Carolyn, you'd like to offer a more, let's say, refined distinction between the two.
So perhaps a way to do that is just to talk a little bit about the market notice and that is coming out. If it isn't already out, it's out. That just talks about exactly what this purchase program will look like of Government of Canada's. It'll be in the secondary market. We've committed to a minimum of $5 billion a week. And as the governor said earlier, over a period that will be long enough to ensure that a recovery is well underway. Now that amount is scaled to think about improving market functioning across the full yield curve. We would be purchasing across the full yield curve. Now we would continue to look at market functioning and see what amount is actually needed and adjust it accordingly. As the governor said, if we were to at a future date decide that instead of just looking at market functioning in and of itself, but we wanted to think about particular yield curve control, so what kind of yields we'd like to see at different places along the curve, then the amount that we would purchase would be geared to achieving that.
So just a reminder, if you have a question, just email communications@bankofcanada.ca and we will put you on the list. And when it comes time, when I call on you, please unmute your phone by pressing *7. La prochaine question de François Desjardins, Le Devoir. François?
Bonjour, ma question a été répondue. Merci beaucoup.
Okay, merci. Next question then from Kevin Carmichael, Financial Post. Go ahead, Kevin.
Good morning. Sorry, I'm going to come back to QE again. QE programs are often associated with the creation of new money. Just want to clarify, is that happening here?
What it does is it creates the level of liquidity that the system is demanding, which is, you know, not exactly the same as money. So it's a more refined kind of notion than that. But throughout the economy, let's just take an example of a company with a credit line with a bank, and that company is nervous about how things are going to develop, not sure what their cash needs are, and so they draw down their credit line and put it in cash, and then they park that cash in their bank. But they've drawn it from the bank. Now they think they've got all the cash that they need to weather the storm. Well, in behind all that, the bank itself needs to fund that draw. And if they're, you know, already have put out mortgages and so on, what they do is they fund themselves in the markets in order to produce that money for that draw. It's the funding markets where the functioning is really important, okay, that most of our work has been in, is to ensure that in some way or other those markets are working so that they can be tapped and that financial intermediation process can go on as usual. And the Bank of Canada is working in various parts of that marketplace in order to unstick them and make sure that they are functioning and that we're on the side of the market so that price discovery can happen and everything works. It's working better than before we started all that, but as I said before, it's not working perfectly. In the process of buying those assets, the Bank of Canada balance sheet goes up, and of course, what that means is that there's a corresponding increase in settlement balances on the other side of the Bank of Canada balance sheet, and those settlement balances are out in the system in order to keep the system liquid, and everybody's got as much cash on hand as they want. But it's not creating money in the sense of your textbook. It is, what you're doing is you're creating liquidity because people need it in order to feel secure or confident that everything's gonna be okay. When their risks go down and they feel more comfortable, they'll demand less liquidity. and then the system can ease back. But that's the balance sheet always does this in a situation like this.
Thank you. Je pense que Hélène Baril est sur la ligne. Hélène, avez-vous une question?
Non, c'est bon. Ma question a été répondue. Merci beaucoup.
OK, merci. I'll call then on Heather Schofield on the, from the Star. Heather, do you have a question?
Sorry, no. Well, I guess... What's left that you can do? Do you see a bottom forming more generally? And I realize this flows into your monetary policy thoughts here. But if you can just discuss about how we're going to form a bottom to this thing.
I'm going to allow that question for Ms. Wilkins.
Thank you, Heather, for the question. I don't want to speculate on what we may or may not do in the future. That's for sure. That's a discussion for Governing Council to have. At the same time, one place you can look to see what's left in terms of in our toolkit, aside from scaling what we've already done and announced today and in past announcements, there are other tools that are still in the toolkit. One is what we call a credit easing, which is a purchase of other assets, such as corporate paper. The utility of doing that would be to affect the cost of capital that firms might be facing and also help market functioning so that they can continue to issue and continue to have the working capital they need to continue their business. We could also purchase assets outside of that. There is another program which is in the document that was referenced in the governor's 2015 speech called Funding for Lending, where we could provide funding to financial institutions who had committed to pass that along to businesses in terms of lending. Those are just a couple of examples of what's left. You asked about where's the bottom. Well, clearly the health issues as they become resolved. Will allow business to start up, and everything that the government's doing in terms of fiscal policy, CMHC has done, what we're doing collectively works together so that that redémarrage, or the restarting of that, will be a lot smoother and people can get back to normal.
Thanks. We're going to go to Bloomberg next. I think it's Eric Hertzberg on the line. Eric, do you have a question? You unmute by pressing star 7. Do you have a question, Eric? Okay, hearing none. Eric, if you do have a question, send an email to communications. Let's go to a second round then. I've got a couple people on the list for a second round. First one, Greg Quinn from Bloomberg. Greg Quinn from Market News. Sorry, Greg.
Changing times. Good morning again. Thank you for the questions. I'm wondering if you could be clear for the general Canadian public. This is clearly a recession we're heading for, correct? And unemployment is going to go up quite a bit. And more technically, is there a potential here for deflation to emerge in Canada?
Well, it's early days for us to be making those kinds of judgments. As I said, we're working on, to the best we can, a new economic outlook, which we'll lay before you on April 15th, and I don't want to front run that. But going back to the concept of, of a recession, I mean, recessions are, the narrowest definition of a recession is when the economy shrinks two quarters in a row. We have negative growth two quarters in a row. Similar to definitions of a bear market. A bear market is when the stock market goes down by 20%. It's a magic number, but it's only a conventional number. And so right now, it's really hard for us to say, what the net effect of all of this on the economy is going to be. Obviously, a major significant shutdown of activity, but offset to some degree that we won't know till afterwards by the defensive measures that the fiscal policy that have been put in place will take. And as I said last week, the fortuitous formulation of that is that it's elastic, that the fiscal response is bigger if the downside of the economy is bigger. So that's an automatic form in the shock absorption properties of the economy. So that remains to be seen. But I think going beyond that technical version of what a recession is about, it's about the underlying dynamics. A recession in truly is when a degree of pessimism enters into firms, that is results in layoffs, and that makes pessimism among consumers, and that makes them spend less, and that causes firms to cut back even further. That's a negative cycle of pessimism. As we've said throughout this, what we've been doing is, for example, cutting interest rates now to the lower bound is intended to cushion the blow in terms of mortgage renewals and variable rate mortgages. That's about its primary effect in this context with the economy shut down. But what it does is it positions the economy very well for its recovery once we have returned to a normal situation. It's a very big question about whether consumer confidence and business confidence can be maintained, and I think the policies are aimed at doing that. I'm optimistic that they can be, and therefore that we won't have, even though we may have I don't know yet whether we will have a technical recession as measured, that's not the important thing. The important thing is the underlying behavior, the underlying dynamics of expectations and confidence. And so for that, we're going to do our utmost to make people feel comfortable that we're bridging to normalcy.
Next question from Dave Parkinson at the Globe and Mail.
Governor, I did want to ask, and maybe another way around some of the stuff that Greg was trying to get at, and I know you don't want to front run your NPR next month, but obviously you make reference to the sharp decline in world oil prices, and in particular Canadian oil prices. Obviously, we've been seeing lower and lower expectations for second quarter. 20-30% kind of annualized downturns coming from the bank economists. I'm just wondering in terms of your thinking on the rate cut and your decision to go ahead now rather than wait a couple more weeks or just your decision to go at all, how much are you weighing what you're seeing with those second quarter numbers? How much were you weighing the impact that you've said before you can calculate quite easily of that drop in oil prices? Like how much did those two factors go into the decision today to lower rates?
Well, that's an excellent question, but a really hard one. But let me just say that judging from how things went in 2015, we still at that time we were dealing with about a 50% drop in oil prices and a big, about a 50 or 60% decline in investment in the oil sector. We're not sure what we're looking at here, but it's let's say it's in a similar ballpark. And so the analysis of that with our models, we will have that, of course, in the background as we frame up our new outlook. That would be sufficient reason for us to be cutting interest rates. As I said in previous press conferences, that is an important layer of the Canadian economy, and the adjustments to lower oil prices spread across the entire economy. And so there would have been a policy response to that kind of a shock if the COVID-19 had not even occurred. So that is, of course, in principle, analyzable, but of course, very hard to do with the overlay of the medical emergency that we're facing and the shutdowns. And I am aware that forecasters are doing, let's call it what it is, arithmetic around what these shutdowns will mean to measured GDP. And as I said a moment ago, the point estimate of that. We aren't in a forecasting contest here. We're trying to figure out what is actually occurring behaviorally, and therefore what should we be doing as policymakers. So I'm not too interested in those particular numbers. Rather, making sure that we've got policies in place that cushion the blow and mitigate or avoid as much as possible structural damage to the economy. And as we've said for a long time, monetary policy has only a limited amount of room to maneuver in any case, that as we were going along, if we knew that if we had a shock that was big and negative, it would primarily be a fiscal response, and so it is. And so our job is more of a, if you like, a complementary role to ensure that financial markets are working well and those other policies will work well, and to be looking ahead to what the recovery will look like and what the economy will need then. I will add one other thing, which is that for technical reasons, it made sense for us to lower the overnight rate now because we were at 0.75, and that meant that out in the marketplace, of course, Mark, interest rates are lower, and that creates a bit of a disconnect in the overnight markets. This rectifies that at the same time. So it does a number of things at once for us. But primarily on the monetary policy front, it's a forward-looking kind of analysis. The economy will need these kinds of support in order to ensure a quick resumption of activity. And so we think it's better to have it in place now.
Next question from Eric Hertzberg at Bloomberg. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, good morning. I'm just curious as to how household debt dynamics are now playing into your analysis at this point. In the past, it's been clear you consider it to be a major risk here. We've got that spike in unemployment. How are you guys thinking about household debt at this point?
Would you like to take that one?
Yes, Governor. Thank you. Well, we've said for a long time that household debt was high, and that was of a concern from a vulnerability point of view. Clearly, at this juncture, what we're trying to achieve is in fact to help households and businesses bridge the gap over a period for which they will be stressed financially, and to make sure that when the health issues are resolved, that the economy can resume growing at a sustainable pace. What has changed, say, from last fall, when we were talking about it then, is that it's unlikely at this stage that the housing market, just as an example, is going to be fueled in an extraordinary or uncomfortable way by any of the actions that we're taking. In fact, what our actions are designed to do is to help small and medium-sized enterprises and businesses stay open as much as they can, and people to get the credit that they need to tide themselves over. So when this is over, the economy can get back to normal.
Thank you. Next question from Andy Blatchford at Politico. Go ahead, Andy.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, hello. I wanted to ask you about, you talked about how at this point you're not contemplating negative rates. I mean, how much more, I guess, firepower do you have to deal with what's happening right now?
Well, as I indicated, I think the primary tool in this situation is not just because interest rates are already really low, which we've known that for a long time, that central banks do not have a lot of room to maneuver because for reasons we've discussed at length at other times, that the next shock that came along would primarily fall to fiscal policy. And in addition to that, this particular shock is one in which monetary policy really is perfectly ill-equipped to do much. We can help cushion the blow, and as I've said, lay foundations. But with businesses closed, it's not as though lower interest rates are encouraging people to go out and spend and to boost economic growth. That just isn't the case. And so it's more of a backup role that monetary policy is playing at this stage. And so in terms of the tools that we have deployed, which are around market function and now including Government of Canada bonds, in which case we've committed to have an aggressive program there, $5 billion of purchases per week until we're confident that conditions have normalized, that we may adjust that amount. But we've also said that we will keep those purchases in place. We'll continue to purchase until such time as we have that the economic recovery is well underway. And so that gives market participants the confidence that we'll be there in that market through this period as strains, there will be strains, of course, on that market. And as I said before, we'll frame that up as a more of a monetary policy framework once we have a better outlook in front of us in April. We have those things can be done in very, very large amounts. I mean, literally unlimited, if you like. And so, on those tools, we have as much room to maneuver as you would like. But as we said, we believe that we are at the effective lower bound. So our intention is to continue to keep the market functioning while we would keep interest rates at this level until we've got a different analysis in front of us. So what else can be done? Well, lots of things, but right now I think we're doing a tremendous amount. As I said, we're focused on the period after the crisis now. The period of the crisis is being written in real time, and some may suggest that this is using a lot of firepower, but I think that a firefighter has never been criticized for using too much water, and I think if you like that's where we want to make sure of it, that we've got great market function, and indeed that the economy then has a great foundation for growth when activity resumes.
We have a follow-up question now from Steve Scheer. Just go ahead, Steve.
Hello, Governor. I wanted to ask, since we've talked about fiscal policy this week, we've seen more than $50 billion in stimulus by the government. We're expecting something more next week, probably for certain sectors like oil and gas. So I wanted to ask, so far, what do you think? Do you think enough has been done on the fiscal side? And how much more do you think will need to be done in the coming weeks to support the economy?
Well, Steve, I'm not going to get pinned down on numbers like that. For one thing, or whether it's enough. I mean, frankly, this is really important. We don't know how much of a contraction of activity would have occurred had there been no fiscal response. Let's agree on that. Now, there has been a significant fiscal response, as you say, but the numbers that you're using are numbers that are conditioned on assumptions about how big the contraction of activity is. So the tools that the government has announced, in particular, the tool where there's income support for people who were not even covered by the EI system before. That's a brand new fiscal tool developed in only about a week's time. That there are like close to six million people who presumably are, for the many of them are losing their jobs in this context and would not have been insured by EI, and now they have an income support mechanism. That's a really important safety net for the economy. Now, if let's say half of that 6 million people end up applying for that, then the program will be sized by a certain amount. But if all of those people end up applying for that program, the program will be twice as big. So the size of the fiscal response is automatically scaled to the size of the damage that the shock is doing to the economy. That's a smart design. So I'm saying I don't know how much in the end will cost fiscally, but what I'm confident about is that it will be responsive to the underlying conditions. And that's about as good a design as you can have. And that's only one of the elements of the plan that the government has tabled, as you mentioned. So don't get preoccupied with whether the number you've heard is big enough. Think more in terms of the underlying behavior and how that will be responsive to the needs of the economy. And again, in our case, for monetary policy, it's making sure that the foundation remains solid and well-functioning and has everything prepared for the next phase, which we're bridging to, normalcy.
We have two follow-up questions, and then we're going to have to conclude. The first one from Eric Hertzberg at Bloomberg. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi. Yes, I'm curious if you guys could give your thoughts on the weakness in the loonie right now and how that might pass through into consumer, how it's going to affect the consumer. I know you guys are kind of hesitant to comment on the currency, but what are you thinking about it?
Well, I would never say that I don't think about it because I watch it all the time. But I think. Primarily, we know that historically, and it is again the case here, that the most important variable that drives the loonie around is global commodity prices. And this is certainly a case where we've had a decline in commodity prices, and particularly in oil. I've seen articles where people claim that relationship comes and goes. There are long periods where the loonie's not moving with oil prices. It's kind of superficial. When the oil's moving a lot, the loonie moves with it because it's such an important sector of our economy. And that has happened again here. So I would say, well, just be mindful of that relationship. And when oil prices are stable for a while, it tends to be interest rate differentials between Canada and the U.S. are the other major variable. Well, those differentials are effectively, they're not meaningful and they're not changing. So I'm not going to make a forecast for the dollar at all. It's just to remind everybody that it's an important shock absorbing variable in our economy, particularly when we have shocks that affect us differently from the rest of the world. And so, yes, the whole world is being affected by the COVID-19 shock. But some countries are affected twice. That would be us, because one of the first effects, combined with the little oil price competition that has erupted between Saudi Arabia and Russia, that has put even more downward pressure on oil prices. And that means the Canadian economy has two shocks to deal with relative to other countries. And in that case, the Canadian dollar tends to help with the adjustment process, just as it did in 2014, 2015. It's doing the same thing now. So it's in that sense that we observe it. It goes, therefore, into our models and helps us understand how the future will look. Of course, we've had a bit of a decline in the dollar in the last few weeks for the reasons just mentioned, and that will feed through into things, certain imported prices. We have that well modeled. We'll explain that well during the monetary policy report on April 15th, so that you'll be able to see in advance how it's likely to play out. It won't be easy because, of course, markets are not functioning quite like normal. But the economists will do their best. They're the best forecasting team anywhere. And so I'm confident we'll have a coherent story for you then.
And final question to Kevin Carmichael of Financial Post. Go ahead, Kevin.
Governor, you said previously that you're speaking with the heads of the big banks a couple of times a week. Are you satisfied with the way the banking system or the big banks are passing on what you're doing sort of through into the financial system and therefore through into the rest of the economy?
Yes, so we have a high level of collaboration, even in peacetime, with those people, with that group. Carolyn and I meet with them twice a year, and we have informal conversations on a very regular basis. And now we are all, the eight of us, meeting with a couple of others twice a week. In that sense, yes, I mean, I think they're doing great work. They're keeping the credit channels open. They're, of course, facing, as I talked before, funding issues. It's not easy for them to continue to fund in the process I described before with as credit is drawn. It's costing a bit more because the markets are tight. We think that the moves that have been made will help that. Some of these moves take a little time. So, for instance, in particular, a really big channel will be the CMHC IMPP program, where you know, big bundles of mortgages can be purchased, and that frees up room on the bank balance sheet. And of course, directly helps them fund these other channels. And of course, our purchases of CMBs does the same thing. So we're working both ends of that. So the banks are this is, of course, to begin with, no question in my mind, the best banking system in the world. It's highly resilient. We've put them through amazingly difficult stress tests over the recent in the last year or two, and of course everybody's capital levels are much higher than they were back when during the financial crisis, which they weathered really well even then. And so all to say that the system's working well, and I do appreciate other moves they've made around helping people to defer their mortgage payments. That's a really important piece of the safety net that they're contributing, and as well keeping those credit facilities open for companies of all sizes and shapes. This is a crucial element of the entire picture of the ecosystem. We can't do all this by ourselves, that's for sure. So that level of collaboration is really high, and I appreciate it very much.
Okay, thank you. Just before we wrap up, a reminder that we will have a broadcast quality video of this press conference available for the media. If you'd like a copy, just email our media relations team for details at communications@bankofcanada.ca. That concludes today's press conference. Thank you very much to the Governor and Senior Deputy Governor, and thank you to all of you for participating. Merci tout le monde.